All right, we are back. Welcome to Tariq Radio. We had some real strange technical difficulties a second ago, but we're here. We're back. Ladies and gentlemen, I was going live and nobody could see or hear anything, but I'm here right here on Tariq Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, today's show is brought to you by OxyWellness.com to experience the natural benefits of what CBD can do for you and your health and well-being. Check out OxyWellness.com. It's a brand that's pure THC-free friendly product line that addresses ailments like pain, inflammation, stress, and much more. You can follow them on Instagram at OxyWellness. That's O-X-Z Wellness. And you can go to their website, OxyWellness.com, ladies and gentlemen. So we're here. Late night creep. Shout out to everybody who's still up so y'all can join us. Let everybody know on social media that we're live right now, ladies and gentlemen. And what we're going to do, we're going to take a very quick commercial break and we'll be right back right here on Tariq Radio. Don't move a muscle.
Yo, you still ain't getting women? Really? Come on, son. You need to go to badboymembership.com and step up your game. What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Mr. Locario, the bad boy of the dating game, and I'm telling you that if you really want to attract beautiful women, you need to go to badboymembership.com. This is where you get 45 through 90 minute step-by-step dating advice tutorials every month. Just sign up, follow the advice, and you'll get the woman you want. Go to badboymembership.com. That's badboymembership.com.
What's good? It's the Melanated God, your man Jared D. Fineness. And right now, I want you to check out my brand new street album, The Black Code 2. It features my brand new single, Match My Vibe.
Only I don't have a specific type. I'm just particular about the things I like. So if I'm shallow,
visit www.jareddfineness.com and cop the Black Code 2. It's Black Empowerment Warrior Class music. For real!
If you like super-powered black ninjas, and if you like comic books, check out the new comic book that's featured on Kickstarter called Sankara. Now, this is from the creator of Void Beast, Mr. Matthew Jones. And this character is very interesting. Sankara, the character, is taken to a new land where he's taught to live by their ways. But everything is not what he seems. If you want to know more about this story, go to Kickstarter and support Sankara. Also, follow Matthew on Instagram at Akachi Jones. That's A-K-A-C-H-I-J-O-N-E-S. Check out a brand new book called The Anatomy of a Corporate Lynching. This is by a brother named Charles Ford. And in this book, he takes us behind the scenes of his public copyright lawsuit against his employer, Con Edison. This book, he doesn't change any names to protect what he calls the guilty. He talks about how he stood his ground legally against theft and racial discrimination. So check out his book right now, The Anatomy of a Corporate Lynching. It's available worldwide on Amazon, paperback, and on Kindle right now. And find him at author Charles Ford on Instagram.com. Check out BlackStarSurvival.com. That is a black-owned website, which is America's go-to website for outdoor urban survival and tactical products. They have everything you need, be it ammunition, body armor, firearm accessories, parts to custom build your AR, or to upgrade your Glock, survival gear, self-defense items, military surplus, camping needs, anything you need to survive in case of an emergency, and if you just want to be prepared. So again, go to BlackStarSurvival.com. Listen up, family. On Code Clothing is officially the uniform of this black empowerment movement. We've empowered so many for so long. Now it's time for us to make our empowerment the new global trend. On Code is a brand that's exclusive and it's not for general consumption, you dig? You got to be codified to even appreciate this thing of ours. So get fly with OnCodeClothing.com. And don't forget to use the coupon code HC5 at the checkout to save an additional 10% when you purchase two or more items. The discount is limited, so take advantage while it lasts. Go to OnCodeClothing.com.
The year is 2079. The futuristic nation of New Albion has been created to maintain a new racial apartheid system
there is a planned genocide that is going to target the nation's black population. A small group of black revolutionaries band together to launch guerrilla warfare attacks against their oppressors. Do they fail, or do they succeed? Find out the answer by reading the book, Avoid the Machines, the new novel by author Scotty Vasco. Avoid the Machines, now available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com.
You are now tuning into the legendary Tariq Nasheed.
I ain't gave him the blood on that bridge in Selma.
On Tariq Radio.
What's up, guys? We're here. We're back. What's going on, guys? Welcome. Let's chop up some good game on the late night creep. Glad to have y'all tuning in. I hope you guys are streaming the Hidden Colors 5 film. It is available right now for streaming. We've had the DVD for sale for a few months. It's still in the top 5 bestseller. And now, ladies and gentlemen, you can stream Hidden Colors 5 right on your computer, right on your laptop, right on your iPhone, right on your iPad. All that good stuff. Go to HiddenColorsFilm.com right now. HiddenColorsFilm.com right now. And get your stream on, and also get the DVD too if you don't have the DVD. It's very good to just have that just in case the internet goes out. We need to have tangible products that we can put our hands on. So if you don't have a DVD player, which a lot of people don't because of technology, you can stream the movie and enjoy it and all that good stuff, ladies and gentlemen. So a lot of stuff is happening right now. I see somebody in the chat room. They're talking about the impeachment. They're talking about trying to really impeach Trump and having some impeachment hearings and all that. I know y'all been hearing a lot of talk of that. And really the only way the Democrats can beat Trump is if they impeach him. The Democrats are getting real desperate right now. That's really a desperate move. That's a very desperate move. The only way they can, the Democrats know they don't have a chance in hell to win. So the best bet they have is to completely try to impeach Trump. And let me tell you something, black people, if something like that happens, if they were to impeach Trump, that would be very bad for black Americans because there will be an immediate outlash and a backlash. There's going to be a backlash like you've never seen, and we are going to be in the crosshairs. I want black people to really wrap your minds around that. Black people, really wrap your mind around that. If they impeach Trump, we are going to be targeted like you've never seen. The backlash is going to be against black people. These white supremacist groups are going to hit the streets heavy, and black people, y'all not prepared. Y'all need to be prepared. But there's going to be a big, somebody said white lash, of course. And the problem is, because there's going to be a backlash, white lash, the Democrats are not going to help us at all. They're not going to protect black people. They're not going to do anything to help or save or protect us. They're going to turn a blind eye and let these white supremacists go in on us. The same way they did when Obama got elected. Remember, when Obama got elected, there was a big backlash against black Americans. That's why all those killings started happening right under Obama. That all that killing, Mike Brown, Tamir Rice, Trayvon Martin, all of that was a response to Obama. And we saw how they turned a blind eye to us getting slaughtered like that. They didn't do, and I'm talking about the Democrats, because the Republicans, you know, they're always going to be team white supremacy first. But the Democrats, the way they turned their heads, including Obama, and allowed that to happen is unforgivable. This is why we're not supporting them now. This is why they're scratching and scrambling, trying to figure out how to finesse us, and why we are not supporting them now. What they did, the Democrats, because we've been so loyal to the damn Democratic Party since the 60s. We've been so loyal to them, and for them to turn their backs and allow us to be slaughtered the way they've allowed us to be is completely unforgivable. Whenever Democrats, and I'm not a Trump supporter at all, because that's the thing. A lot of times when people criticize the Democrats, they got Trump's balls in their throat, and that's not happening over here. But the way we've supported them, black people have been so loyal to them, and for them to just have complete disregard of us and then prioritize everything over us, and the way black people are suffering now, black people, listen, you don't owe the Democrats a damn thing. When they start talking and they ain't talking about giving up some tangibles, everything else is blah, 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 and offensive. Understand, when the Democrats start talking and the first thing out of their mouths is not what the hell they're going to do specifically for us, I'm offended. I automatically get offended. I don't want to hear nothing they have to say. Everything they're about at this point is anti-Black American. It's anti-us. Somebody said, if not the Democrats, who? None of them. You understand? You don't have to go out there and choose the lesser of any evils. We've been doing that stupid shit for the longest, and how is that working for us? You don't have to vote for the lesser of a damn evil. You hold that vote, ladies and gentlemen, and then you let the Democratic Party crumble on their own. You understand? Let me explain something to you. Black people, we are the soul of this nation. We are the literal moral compass of this nation. We are the soul of this nation. Everything great about America is because black people made it great. We were the people who held the integrity of this nation together. We are the people who represent everything America is supposed to be about. We represent that, not the white supremacist. If we weren't here as the moral anchor of this country, the white supremacists would have destroyed it a long time ago. Do y'all understand? See, this is why you need to understand history. So let's get some things straight. And I've always brought this up. Number one, black people, we're the foundation of this nation. It wasn't white supremacists. First of all, we were here long before the first white supremacists set foot here, based on their archaeology. See, we got to really understand and learn history. We got to understand and learn history. We can go into the Olmec presence down there in South America. We can go into the Folsom presence. These are Aboriginal black skinned people. The Okos people. These are African looking people that were here before, thousands of years before the white supremacists showed up. You can go down to South America and look at the different murals of people who would be considered black today down there. So we've been here a long time. A lot of Aboriginal people on this land were simply reclassified as black. So we've been here. This is our homeland. Now, there was a slave trade. Many black people were brought over. We were basically mixed in with a lot of the native society. In addition to being brought over here, a lot of us was just mixed in. So they would just go find a native person and say, okay, come on, Negro. We're going to put some clothes on you and put you on a plantation. They would just do that. So let's understand our relationship to this land. Let's be very clear about our relationship to this land. There's a reason why the Spanish, some of the Aztec people that they saw, they referred to them as Negro. You understand? We better understand our history, especially to this land. See, we've been taught that we're outsiders. We're not outsiders. It's funny when you have people who've only been here for a couple of generations telling us we need to go back somewhere. Son of a bitch, this is our land, especially if you're a white supremacist, you're a Johnny come lately. This is our ancestral land. Let's own that. Now, genetically, we have African DNA. Culturally, we're foundational Black American. Let's get that in our head. See, the white supremacists like to promote the, well, you're African American. See, when we do that, we're othering ourselves. We're not African American. We're foundational Black Americans. We got to own that. Because Africans will tell you you ain't really African no more when you break it on down. We are our own distinct ethnic group. We are foundational Black Americans. You understand? So we're going to have to stop othering ourselves, which is what we're doing now. We're not doing that no more. I'm glad we're finally owning up to who we are as our own distinct ethnic group. And that's scary to the white supremacist establishment, because that means we're getting on code. And when you start getting on code, you're going to ruffle feathers. And that's what we're going to talk about later on today. Rigid codification. We're going to go deep in that. I want y'all to understand how rigid codification works. It's not always pretty. You're going to ruffle a lot of feathers, but that's part of the game. You better expect that. Because the white supremacists, they're on code to the point of desperation. They're desperate trying to be on code right now. And I saw them, they're on code right now trying to really push this LGBT agenda. They're trying to prioritize everything over us. And see, we're going to have to get away from the whole minority thing. We're going to have to get away from the people of color thing. We're going to have to get away from the whole diverse group thing. We're going to have to disapply ourselves to that stuff. Because when we start trying to get up under all these umbrella labels, that's used to weaken us. And because of the Civil Rights Act, we allow too many other groups to come under that umbrella, and all of the civil rights benefits are going to everybody else. Everything that's supposed to come to us is being given to everybody else. As we see in places like LA, out here where I am, the homeless problem is a major, major issue. And not just LA, in Detroit, the Bay Area, for Black people, homelessness is a big problem because of immigration and because of gentrification. And when we talk about reparations, everybody gets confused. Don't nobody know what we're talking about. Where's the money going to come from? Do y'all know they have all types of housing programs and housing set-asides for goddamn refugees out there in Detroit? They done built some multi-million dollar homes for some damn refugees. And all them homeless Black people out there in around the Detroit area. So now non-citizen refugees can come in there and get a brand new damn house. But when we talk about reparations, everybody wants to act dumb, like, oh, where's the money? We don't know where the money's going to come from. Well, we'll use some of that refugee money. They're coughing up money for everybody. Hispanics, all the LGBT community, they're about to give them forms of reparation as well. And speaking of the LGBT community, and I knew this was coming. They're already setting it up, and I want y'all to remember this now. They're trying to set Eddie Murphy up, because Eddie's about to get this big comeback special on Netflix. I think they might still be negotiating. When Eddie does his comeback special on Netflix, that's going to be the hugest thing in comedy. Oh, yeah, everybody, by the way, hit the like button. Everybody hit the like button while I'm talking. Hit the like button and hit the subscribe button and hit that bell so that you will know when we are on live. So everybody hit the subscribe button. Hit the bell. That will give you notifications that we're live. And hit the like button right now. But like I said, Eddie Murphy, he's about to get a major bag doing a comeback special on Netflix. And right now, they're already setting the seeds for attacking him. And I was looking at some show, Andy Cohen's show, that Watch What Happens Live. And this was a few months ago. Andy Cohen brought up something like, yeah, Eddie was saying some problematic things about gay people once upon a time. And I'm like, why in the hell is he bringing something like that up? And I'm like, okay, he must have gotten some instructions from the top brass. So they're already getting the chess move together. And then I saw today where Eddie Murphy is remorseful for jokes from back in the 80s. So now I don't want Eddie to do that. Come out and apologize for jokes he told 30 years ago. So they're going to use that to try to paint him as a homophobe. So they can push this trans LGBT agenda. That's what they're going to do. They're setting that up now. Yeah, they got that mafia. They got Eddie in their sight. See, that's why Eddie has not done comedy in so long. If you want to know why Eddie has not done comedy in so long, because when he did his last comedy special, Raw, I mean, Eddie was a big movie star at the time, and he was about to go back on tour, so everything Eddie would do would get criticized. So Eddie said, let me just tap out before they try to use something in my comedy routine to sabotage and undermine my career. So he just got off the stage, and he stuck to movies, which was a smart move. That's why a lot of folks was like, why'd he stop doing comedy? Nah, they were about to do him like they do every other black man, but Eddie saw it coming a mile away, so he said, I just kick back, lay low, and just do my comedy. I mean, just do my movies, and I just won't do no comedy routines. You dig? So they're going to try to bring up all of his old comedy routines from 30 and 40 damn years ago. And we got to shut that down, because it was a little white supremacist dude in Iowa. He's like some kind of hero out there now because he raised some money for a hospital or something. But then they found some tweets, some anti-black tweets from about 7 years ago. So all the white supremacists were like, oh, 7 years was so long ago. People can change. See, whenever they get caught doing something 2 or 3 years ago, all of a sudden they act like that was a million years ago. Oh my God, it was 2 years ago. I mean, everybody's not going to be the same person they were 2 years ago just because he made nigger jokes 2 years ago. You dig? Yeah, somebody made a good point. They're not going after Eminem. They don't go after the Andrew Dice Clays, and he said all types of wild stuff back in the day. But they're going to try to hold Eddie Murphy's old comedy routines over his head to paint the whole homophobia narrative. So just watch out for that. See, these people are on an anti-black code like you've never seen. We have to be on a pro foundational black American code. Because the lie that black people are intrinsically homophobic, that's a major lie that they've been pushing for years, and I don't know why black folks have not checked them on that damn lie. We got to stop letting the media lie on us. We got to stop letting them tell these lies, because they're setting us up for the fall. The crime and the violence that happens in the LGBT community happens from other LGBT people. Speaking of that, did you guys see the interview with Malik Yoba? He did an interview with The Root. The Root is basically, as we know, that's an LGBT propaganda media outlet. So he was up here with the dude named Terrell J. Starr, who himself, he dates trans men too, the Terrell J. Starr guy. And him and Malik, they're talking and he's interviewing Malik. And both of these guys consider themselves heterosexual, so they're in the closet, but they're supposed to be activists for LGBT studies and trans this and trans that, but they're both in a damn closet. And this exchange that they're having right here shows the tension within those in that community. And Malik Yoba got mad and looked like they were almost about to fight, but let me play some of that interview with Malik Yoba being interviewed at the Root by Terrell J. Starr, who is a closeted man who likes trans dudes.
Or, since this allegation, too, if you search your name on social media, some sex workers have come forward saying that you've long solicited sex from trans women, and because of this, you've been criticizing for fetishizing.
And now let me say this. Let me stop right there. First of all, I don't like him doing that. That's dry snitching to a certain degree. People know I've heard stories about Malik Yoba for years. You don't say nothing, but Malik has come out and said that he likes trans. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm glad he finally came on out and said it, because we've known that on the streets for a long time. But what the dude on the Root is doing, that's kind of dry snitching. You dig? And that's kind of bitch made. You don't do that. No. Talking about the dude is out here soliciting this and that, and so many people said he's soliciting, and that's dry snitching. So that's kind of a bitch move, but it's the Root, so whatever.
Trans women and not having intimate and loving relationships with them. So what would you say to that?
I don't know what you're talking about.
So we've gone on social media and we found people who have said this. And so
social media now is the truth. That's the repository.
Faces, yeah. Their faces on it. So we were just asking if you had anything to say about that. Okay, so going on to, what do you say to trans black women who say that you're centering yourself and that you're being opportunistic and focusing on your attraction as opposed to their issues and without proving that you're ready to do the work? So what would you say to that?
So you and I sat for 4 hours the other day.
Correct.
And we decided how we were going to approach this.
We went through a number of questions, and we decided how we were going to approach this. And we're actually recording, and the more you talk, the better, the worse it looks for you. So what I'm asking is that we're having a conversation.
What did you say?
I said the more that we're talking, the more I'm just concerned. So I'm generally concerned.
What did you just say?
I said that the more that it looks bad for you. That's
really
what I'm saying. Yes, sir.
This looks bad for me.
Yes, because I'm asking
out
a number of questions.
We're done, bro.
Okay.
We're done. It looks bad for me because I chose to come here.
Somebody about to get kicked in the bussy.
Speak to you about what you do and what I've done. It looks bad for me. It's a setup. I don't like this.
Okay.
We said that we were going to focus on policy.
And we did. And we also said, and we also stand on allegations, homie. I don't appreciate this at all. And now we had a conversation about a white man.
I don't appreciate this shit at all, homie. We discussed for four fucking.
They're going to choke each other with their thongs.
And I was, you going to stand allegations, homie? The fuck is wrong with you? We sat for four fucking hours. And you gonna stand some fucking allegations? Fuck you. The fuck is wrong with you? This is my fucking life. The fuck is wrong with you? Yeah.
That bussy energy is coming on. That's funny. That's hilarious. That's funny. But you know what it is? This whole thing. You know, look. The black LGBT community is really no black LGBT community. Let's be clear. There's no black LGBT community. There is not a black LGBT community. There's not. Uh-oh, hold on. Wait. This came on after the fight.
Boys.
Hold on. This came on after the fight. Hold on.
I'm a dick boy. I'm a dick boy.
Can you guys not? This is black.
That's fucked up, man.
We have.
What the fuck is wrong with you, man? We fucking sat for 4 hours. Don't tell me shit. Don't tell me, brother. This isn't professional. This is life.
His intention is not to antagonize you. We're trying to.
No, we discussed the process. We said we would start. No.
We can talk about it. Let's bring it.
No, my man.
Just so we had an office setting of nobody's here to argue with you.
No.
Let's be professional.
Listen. You're not the one being called names in the street.
Okay.
We discussed.
Okay, that's enough of that. That's the fight music. You know how fighters come out to music, they come out to Addicted to Boys. But look, the thing is, see, Malik Yoba thinks that there is a real black LGBT community, and it's not. There is no black LGBT community. See, that's Malik Yoba's trying to be a spokesperson, and he's trying to, he thinks that he's going to make moves in the black LGBT circles. There is no black LGBT. There's no real black LGBT community. It's basically, all of them are basically vying for attention from the white LGBT community. There is no codified black LGBT community. They don't have any institutions. They don't have anything. Basically, a lot of what the black LGBT people do is kind of hang around the white LGBT community looking for zaddy, getting crumbs off the table from them. And they are cutthroat with each other. They'll slit each other's damn throat in order to get brownie points from zaddy. And that's what Malik is learning. This is why there's a lot of anger and animosity. You know, just like the hood. There's no codified community. This is where you see how fast he got pissed off, and these dudes don't want to come to terms with who they are, and it's just a lot of anger. So that's them. That's them. They don't want to come correct. There's a lot of lying to themselves. So that's them. A lot of that energy falls on them. It has nothing to do with straight black society. It has nothing to do with us. And stop letting them put that stuff on us. And we have to counter this stuff because, again, at schools around the country, they're starting to make more of these trans studies and LGBT studies. They're going to make that mandatory. I saw something where they have like some underwear that will hide your gender. I swear to God, I saw that. Look that up. Google that. They got some. Mattel just put out some non-gender dolls. They're really targeting us, family. They're targeting us heavy. So we got to do like our brother Neely Fuller says. Look, we got to look at ourselves to counter them. We got to call ourselves counter-racist sexual. That's what I am. All of this is to cause confusion. All of this is to cause confusion. They're coming up with all these different sexualities. This is to all cause confusion. I am a counter-racist sexual. You understand? I'm going to be the sexuality that counters white supremacy. That's the sexuality I am. I'm a counter-racist sexual. You understand? Because they're really trying to appeal to our younger folks with this LGBT propaganda. This is why they're giving a lot of fake praises and accolades to a lot of black LGBT people. Just like with Lil Nas X, they pump him up, and what they show, look how much publicity we're giving this one-hit wonder rapper because he's gay. Because he's gay, we're going to put him on all the magazines, we're going to parade him around on all the award shows, and this could be you. Look at Billy Porter. We just gave him an Emmy. He just won an Emmy for one of them shows. And now they have justification to parade him around all over the place. See, they prioritize them and put them all over the place and parade them around and say, hey, look, if you have this type of sexuality, look at how we'll praise you and reward you. See, the message is we'll reward you if you come on out and be on this side of the game. You dig? See, we got to understand how this game is being played out here. And we have to counter that. Because what they're trying to do is prioritize everything over us. And again, this is a pharmaceutical medical thing that they're trying to do. Again, I've talked about this in depth. They're trying to create a whole trans industry. And this is what this really is about. They don't give a shit about no black trans person. They can give less than a damn about a black trans person or a black LGBT person. They're not giving you any resources. So that shows you how they feel about you. See, watch how they prioritize all these other folks over us, especially the immigrant thing. And you watch the propaganda as far as that. Did you guys see that Absola? What's that show? Bob Hart Absola? There's a show on CBS where they have a Nigerian woman who's courting her and this fat white man are courting each other. And that's very interesting, that dynamic. You see, we'll have this African immigrant woman, this white man courting her. Now, he's a fat white man, so you don't have to be too offended, white women, because it's a white man that a lot of white women won't want. So that makes it okay so that white women will be comfortable with it. But I saw a clip of this show, and it put in some funny style anti-ADOS, anti-foundational black American rhetoric in it. And this is by design. You got to be very careful because they're going to try to use this show. And some critics have said this. They're going to try to use this show to have the Africans bash foundational black Americans. Now, this is a clip from the show. The mother, Absola, Shola, whatever her name is, she has to go to school because her son got into a fight with another black kid at the school. So now the Absola character, the Nigerian woman, is having an argument with a black woman, a black American woman. And there's a white principal or whatever kind of mediating it. But listen to this.
I don't understand. My son does not make fights.
Well, apparently some unfortunate words were said to him and he lost his temper.
I don't care who said what. Her son assaulted my son.
Yes, I got that part. Now, what was the unfortunate word your son said to my son?
That's not important. It's just trash talk.
Okay, I'll ask again. What trash did our son say?
I'm just going to write it down.
Huh. Jungle Beach.
Again, trash talk.
So, your son, who I assume is the same color as you, uses a racist word for my son. How is this possible?
Still no excuse for him throwing a chair at my Calvin.
Hey, call me a jungle bitch. I see how fast I throw a chair at you.
Okay. Let's all just take a deep breath and figure out how we can resolve it.
Okay. Let's unpack that. Hold on. Okay. First of all, all the clips I've seen of this show, it's extremely unfunny. Nothing is funny in there. I've not seen one thing remotely humorous about this show. That's number one. I've not seen not one funny clip. It's so unfunny. It's weird that it even got on air. The fact that it's so incredibly unfunny. There's not one joke in here that's just on an internal laugh I don't have. So why would they put this on? This is almost public access unfunny. It's very unfunny. As you saw that clip, it's cringeworthy unfunny. So why would they put some shit like this on TV? They're putting it on as propaganda. They're going to use this to try to attack foundational black Americans. Now notice the African mothers, was complaining that the Foundation of Black Americans woman's child called her son a jungle bitch. Look, I've been around for a long time. I've been all over this country. I've lived north, south, east, west. I have never in my damn life heard a black person refer to an African person as a damn jungle bitch. I've never heard that in my damn life. Who in the hell says that? I've never heard that term before. That's some shit that the white writers made up. Black folks don't even talk like that. We don't call somebody a jungle bitch. That's something that a white person would say about an African person. I've never in my life heard that before. And the fact that you would put that on television and attribute it to black Americans. Now, booty scratcher, that was a taunt back in the 70s and 80s, but black kids would call each other that. That was like a little grade school taunt back in the 70s and 80s. But even now, I don't see black kids now using the term African booty scratcher. I've never heard jungle bitch. Never. Not only will a black kid not say that, number one, and on the show, they showed her son. So he looked like just a regular black kid. So no one would call him that. No one would call him a jungle bitch because you wouldn't know that he wasn't from here. Number one. So they're making up these fake narratives to justify harming us systematically. Yeah, and really, somebody in the chat room made a good point. The show is really making a mockery of African people to a certain degree, which they make a mockery of both of us, black American and black people in Africa. So they've always made a mockery of both. But we understood the game. We understand the game. But them putting this type of filth on television, we have to understand that it's propaganda. And the thing is, a lot of people are upset that Foundational Black Americans are kind of looking out for our own group first. A lot of people are upset with that, and that's something that you're just going to have to get over. Other people being upset with that, that's not going to change how we get down. We can't afford to put the capes on for all these other groups. We can't do that. And with the white supremacists trying to put propaganda out like this, we have to be Foundational Black Americans. We got to be codified as ever. We've tried to get on code with other groups, and it's just not working like that. We've tried for the last 6-7 decades to get on code with other black people globally, and it's not working the way it should work. So we gotta do another approach to this thing, which is look out for our damn group and strengthen our group. And every other group does that. See, we've weakened ourselves too much. And other people want to cry foul. And one thing that we do, and one thing that we're doing, we're letting people keep their own divisive energy. Because for so long, people have been divisive with us. They go out of their way when they do something positive. You go out of your way to say that you're not black. For years, and this is why I don't want to hear no complaints from all of these non-ADOS groups. For years, and I hope you're listening, and I want y'all to listen very closely. For years, you've gone out of your way to say that you were not black. If somebody called you a black American, you were very quick to correct them. If anybody called you black, oh, I'm not black, I'm Jamaican, I'm not black, I'm Trinidadian. You went out of your way to say that you were not black, which is okay. If you want to own your island culture or your African culture, okay, we had no problem with it. It's kind of funny style, but okay, we had no problem with it. If you want to have the Dominican Day Parade and the Jamaican Day Parade, okay, knock yourself out. You want to show that you are an other. You're not one of us. And some people got rude with it. They would get damn offended if somebody said that they were black. I saw a lot of Ethiopians. You say, you call an Ethiopian black, they be jet black. They'll correct you. I'm not black. I'm Ethiopian. Okay. All right. Be that. Be that. You do something positive, you are Somalian American. You do something positive, you are the first Indian American, Kamala Harris. Remember? Kamala Harris used to go out of her way to say that she was Indian. They would always promote her as Indian American. Okay, it's fine. A lot of politicians, that's the first Jamaican American elected to this, that. The first Nigerian American doctor that did that. You become a doctor, you become a lawyer, you're Nigerian this, you're Cameroonian this, you're Ugandan that. Okay. But the minute these same people shoot somebody, all of a sudden you black. The minute you get on crack, okay, that's another nigga on crack. That's black. The minute you stab somebody, you black. The minute you pull a scam, you're black. The minute you try to set up a false hate crime with Jussie Smollett, oh, these are two niggas. These are two black dudes who did it. No. No. See, what we're starting to do as Foundational Black Americans, we're letting everybody keep the same energy you had when you were doing something positive. You're going to keep that same energy when you do something negative. And a lot of folks get mad at that because I point out a lot of stuff that happens and they try to attribute it to black crime or black culture. And I'm like, wait a minute, look at that person's background. They're from there. They ain't even one of us. I'm quick to point that out. Now, I want everybody to keep your same divisive energy when you do something negative. I'm tired of black Americans absorbing every other group's negativity. Their negativity becomes a part of black culture. We're cutting that off. There's a video circulating and I posted it. I don't know what country this is in. It's some black folks. I don't know what language they're talking, but it's outside the U.S. I don't know where it is. I think somewhere in the Caribbean. On Twitter, I said possibly Cuba, but a lot of people corrected me on that, and that's why I said possibly, goddammit. But there was a, I don't know, it was outside of us, it was somewhere, they were outside and it was a dead corpse in a casket and there was some woman twerking on the corpse. With a bunch of people standing around the corpse and some woman was in the casket twerking on the corpse. And I said, look, they ain't us. That's some other group. Let's be clear. That's some other damn group. These are non-foundational black Americans doing this ratchet garbage. And I've had a few immigrants get mad at me because of that. We got to stop absorbing everybody's ratchetness and negativity. A lot of stuff that becomes negative in black society, we got to understand that's been brought over from other places. Certain things that becomes black culture. Look at what becomes black culture. When you think of black culture, what do you think about? When you think of black culture now. When you think of black culture, ratchetness. People who can't talk worth a damn. People smoking and twerking. And when you look at those three main things, because let's look at twerking, by the way. Twerking was something that was all that twerking and popping your ass in the streets. Where did that come from? That didn't even come from us. That came from the Caribbean. if we're going to be real, all this damn popping your ass in the streets, sisters weren't doing that back in the day. That was looked down upon. You had to carry yourself a certain way in black society. All that twerking started in the late 80s. That twerking, it started in Miami. That's where that shit came from. That started from Caribbeans going to Miami, and that was part of the Caribbean culture. The carnival and you putting on an outfit and you popping your ass in the streets, that's a part of their culture, which is cool. They would do that ceremoniously. That's part of their culture. Then they started bringing that to Miami. And, you know, Miami started the bass music thing. And understand, Miami and Atlanta became almost a satellite of Miami because of the bass music scene. Remember, the early hip-hop music scene in Atlanta was really bass music, a lot of the bass music. The booty shaking music, and then the strip clubs and all that shit popped off, and then that became a part of black culture. So that came from some outside shit. You understand? So we have to look at where a lot of this stuff comes from. All this popping your ass in. Now the shit looks, it's corny to me now. Everybody's popping your ass in the damn street. You dig? That's not a black American thing. It became our thing because it was brought in by other folks. You dig? So stuff like that, for ceremonies, that's cool. But when it becomes a part of everyday culture, not cool. It's degrading now. Now it looks on, it's on some other gutter type of shit now. When you just, that's all you do on Twitter, pop your ass, you go on any... on black Twitter and black Instagram, and that's all you see. That's become a part of black culture. And then white people, they start mimicking it when they try to act black. Is you got your ass cracked open. And that becomes a part of black culture. You understand? See, we have to look at where a lot of stuff comes from. And then when you point this stuff out, What people start doing, they start doing what I call Wakanda-splaining. We all black, global black people, we black, everybody black, we got to stick together. See, that's Wakanda-splaining. See, now, when we talk about everybody hold your own nuts, all that ratchetness and niggas smoking left and right again, that's some shit that comes from the Caribbean too. Niggas smoking back-to-back, smoking weed all fucking day. That was brought in too. We weren't doing that. But when we talk about rejecting negatives and looking out for ourselves, everybody wants to start Wakanda-splaining. Man, we all got to fight the same struggle. We all got to battle the white man. We all in this together. But black Americans, we're the only ones fighting white supremacy. Let's be real. When it comes to fighting white supremacy, the only people that's really, really fighting white supremacy are black people in America. Some Caribbeans, they get down. They used to, big time. When I'm talking about in the 1800s. But I'm talking about in modern times, right now, who's really fighting white supremacy? I'm talking about modern times. Don't start talking about Dessalines and all these cats because that energy ain't there like it used to be. You dig? Somebody said New Orleans had twerking, but remember, New Orleans, that was a satellite for the Caribbean, too. That's a satellite, a major satellite for the Caribbean because of the French. You dig? But we have to understand certain things. People try to get on this, we all in this together, but nobody's fighting white supremacy besides foundational black Americans. No, for real, when you look at it, who's fighting white supremacy? When people talk about all these people of color in the same struggle, everybody else is cool with white supremacy. Arabs ain't really fighting it like that. You know, you might have some extremists, but at the end of the day, they know who's buying all that oil over there in those countries. It's the Western nations. Asians, you know, the Asian women are trying to get them a damn zaddy. East Indians, no. So who's really fighting white supremacy? It's foundational black Americans really, really going in on it. This is why we get targeted the most. Because we're the only real threat to white supremacy. We're the major threat to white supremacy. And this is why anybody who comes around us, see, we got to get them on code. See, we're getting on code, and we have to get other people on code. And this is like the new Inquisition. See, there's an Inquisition going on right now in black society, also in white society. There's a new Inquisition going on because, see, they're trying to get all the white people on code heavy, especially the white supremacists. The white supremacists are trying to get white society on code. So they're having their own Inquisition. All these school shootings and all that, that's a form of Inquisition. That's them letting white people know y'all better get on code. And they've done this before. See, we got to study the history of Spain. The history of Spain is very interesting. A lot of the cultures that we see now, especially a lot of things having to do with white supremacists and the way they interact with us, a lot of that started in Spain. As we know, in Spain, you had, I think, was it King Roderick? I think that was his name. You had King Roderick, the Visigoth king, in the medieval times, in around the 600s. And there were some things going on out there in Spain. There was a lot of the little Visigoths and the Goths and the Vandals and all these people bickering with each other. And there were some people who were dissatisfied in Spain. And some of the enemies of Roderick went into North Africa and started dry snitching and saying, hey, Roderick ain't shit. He's a punk bitch, and y'all can go in there and take his ass if you want to. So you had some people sneaking over to North Africa, and North Africa is right next to Spain, and they were telling him how weak everything was up there. So the Moors sent a test army up there. Then they said, okay, hey, yeah, we can come up here and take over. So they sent a whole fleet of people up there in the year 711, and they started to take over Spain. All these black people went into Spain and started to take over. Now, history tries to cover a lot of it up by using the term Muslim, but these were black people. The Moors, for the most part, damn near all of them were black, and you had some Arabs, some lighter Arabs and things like that, and a few lighter Berbers mixed in with them. But the Moors were these black men who took over. They took over Spain and Portugal. They took over for 700 years. We talked about this in all of the Hidden Colors films. If you do not have Hidden Colors, y'all need to get the Hidden Colors films, ladies and gentlemen. But the thing is, in Spain, the brothers brought in a lot of upgrades. Not only did they upgrade Spain, those upgrades went all over Europe. They really upgraded Europe. These brothers bought in different foods, science, mathematics, alchemy, building structures, bathing, running water. I mean, they had it popping up in Spain. Spain was the place to be during medieval times. As far as Europe, everything else in Europe was not cracking, but Spain was the place to be. The problem was this, though. Some of the white people in northern Spain and some of those places stayed, you know, pretty segregated to themselves. They didn't get too affected. Certain places. But the white Spanish realized, wait a minute, with these black people all up in here, they're changing the color of the people. We're not white no more. And that's a problem. So these people, even though they're upgrading us and they're giving us all this fly shit, we got all this fly infrastructure, And somebody in the room said they conquered Sicily. Yes, they did. Yes, they had Sicily for a long time to a lot of places in southern Europe. But in Spain, they realized we're getting dark out here. We're not white no more. And it's not like these people are harming us, but just their presence here. Just their presence here is darkening up our country. And that's a problem. So they got into survival mode. They were like, how can we remain white? We got to get these Moors out of here. So they started having in certain parts of northern Spain, they started to get their little troops together and try to push back. And one advantage they saw is that a lot of the Moorish kingdoms were divided. See, they looked at our weaknesses and used our weaknesses as their strengths. In Moorish Spain, there's a lot of brothers who wanted to be the boss. So they had different Moorish kingdoms all over Spain. That's why there's so many castles there. Spain is loaded with castles. These Moorish castles, because all the Moorish kings, they wanted to be the boss. They wanted to be a king here, have their little harem here, and have their harem there. So the white Spaniards, they saw this is an advantage we can use. So we can take over some of these little small kingdoms. So they all started to get on code. And then what they needed to do, when they saw that enough of them, if they got together, they could take over and conquer little small Moorish kingdoms here and there. They said, wait, we need to get as many white people on code as possible. So later on, when the Moorish presence had been there for a few hundred years, the Moors, there was a lot of infighting and more bickering with the Moors. So the white Christians, quote unquote, and I say Christians with a quote, they started to push more Moors further south in Spain. So they're getting their little weight up. So what they needed to do, they needed to get more white people on code, more Christians on code. So this is when they had the Inquisition. The Inquisition was basically, we got these Muslims here, we got Jews here. Now, if you're not a Christian, you're going to be punished. If you're a white person, a Spanish person who's not a Christian, you will be punished. We're going to call you a heretic, accuse you of heresy. They were real big on that. They had something called heresy. Anybody who wasn't on the Christian code, you're going to be killed, punished, tortured, and they would do this for any reason. So they were doing this to white people first to get them on code. So with the Inquisition, for hundreds of years, they would come up with all these techniques on how to hang white people, how to beat them with certain whips, all these different types of torture techniques. They were real big on these different types of torture techniques. Now, these same techniques would be used on black people, especially over here in the U.S. They use these same techniques. But somebody in the chat room mentioned something very interesting. Yes, with pork, they wanted to see who was a secret Muslim or a secret Jewish person. Remember, Jews and Muslims, you know, you don't eat pork. So what they would do, the white Christians in Spain, they started the practice of hanging up pork outside of their shop to let people know this is not a Christian. I mean, this is not a Muslim or Jewish shop. This is a white Christian shop, because they knew that Jews and Moors would not go to a shop that was serving pork. So when y'all see these little delis and all that stuff with meat hanging up in the front, well, that's where that came from. And again, they started to torture the white people to make them get on code. Look at the similarities. Look at what they do here. They would torture. They go in and shoot up a white church. They go shoot up a white school. They're trying to get them on code. You better get on code. So they're getting them on code over there in Spain. That Inquisition, especially women. If these women were not on code and these women were desiring to get into the harems of the Moors, because the Moors were real big on getting them white women, them white Spanish women in their harems. So any white woman who did all that or desired to do that, because they know white women, a lot of them have a deep desire for the soul pole. So they would beat that out of them. And they would say, hey, this is a witch. That's why they were burning them at the stake. They're like, this bitch wants some black dick. That's a witch. Give me that fire. Burn her ass up. And let all you other white women know. Y'all go out there fucking with the Moors, you're going to get this fire on your ass. You understand? They were getting them on code. And they were not taking no no's, ifs, ands, or buts about it. You're going to get on code. Yes, somebody mentioned the Torture Museum. I've been to the Torture Museum in Spain. I've been all over Spain studying. So in Spain, they had something called the Limpieza de Sangre. That's the blood purity. They got real big on this whole blood purity thing. We want to have pure blood Spanish, meaning white. See, a lot of mainstream historians don't talk about that blood purity. See, this is where white supremacy is being formed. See, they were forming modern white supremacy in Spain. All that blood purity talk. That came out of Spain initially. So they were getting all the white people on code with all these torture techniques, and eventually they would use these torture techniques on the Moors. So they would catch these Moors and push them further and further and further south. And until around the 1400s, most of the Moors were basically in the Granada area. They had basically cleansed all the Moors out of Spain. And you had two major kingdoms, Castile and Aragon. Those were the two major kingdoms in Spain. And then you had Granada on the bottom. And Boabdil was the guy who was holding that down. Now, Boabdil, he was trying to make little deals with the white Christian kingdoms. And he was infighting with other Moors down there in Granada. So they were still divided when they needed to be codified more than ever. But the white supremacists in Spain, they were becoming more codified. And then Queen Isabella of Castile married her cousin, who was the King of Aragon, and they brought those Spanish kingdoms together under one unified Spanish white umbrella. And that's how they were able to finally get the Moors completely out of Spain. They combined their military and got them out. This is why when they got them out, they were able to start exploring the world. And they were very brutal. A lot of people don't talk about the brutality that was used against the Moors. All the torture, the use of them dogs, that's another thing. They would use them damn Spanish mastiffs, the mastiffs, the Spanish mastiff dogs, they would use them to attack the Moors. And them Iberian mastiffs or Spanish mastiffs, these dogs are huge as shit. These dogs weigh like 250 pounds and they're like 3 feet tall. And not only that, just to understand how brutal they were, a lot of the children in Spain, the Moorish children, the black children, were orphaned because, you know, their parents were killed in war. They were exiled. So there was a lot of Moorish black orphans just living around churches and mosques. And they would use them same Spanish mastiffs to eat the children. They would let those Spanish mastiffs eat those black children in Spain. This is how cold they were. And they told a lot of the Moors, if you convert, we'll leave you alone, let you stay. Because, see, they tried to make it seem like it was just a religious thing. And then the Moors converted. There were some who left. There were some who were killed. But the ones who stayed and converted to Christianity were called the Moriscos. And after a while, with the Moriscos, they stayed there for some generations. And the white supremacists in Spain said, you know what? We don't trust you, Moriscos. We think y'all say you're Christians, but y'all might be practicing Islam behind closed doors. So we just want all of you out. So in 1609, they signed an edict to just let all the Moriscos out. Those were the converted Moors. So they said, look, all y'all asses got to go. All of you got to go. So they ran all of them out. And then when they ran all the Moors out, they started the practice of bullfighting and the running of the bulls. The running of the bulls in Spain, that's what that ceremony is. When they all dress up in white and chase a black bull all around the city, that's them chasing out the Moors. So they were very celebratory in getting out the Moors finally. And once they got the Moors out, then they took all that wealth that the Moors left. Remember, when they destroyed those kingdoms, they took the wealth. That's why Spain was able to travel all around the world first. How y'all thinks Columbus and all these people were able to get those ships together and come over here? Europe wasn't popping at all. In the 1400s, Europe was so not popping. The only thing that was popping was Spain, and it was popping because they took all the wealth that the Moors had generated. And Columbus took a lot of those soldiers and a lot of those dogs. They took a lot of those big-ass mastiffs down to Cuba, and they used those same type of dogs on some of the black people during the slave trade. And remember another thing, too, a lot of black people who were in Spain, they were thrown on those slave ships and brought over here too. That's another thing. So a lot of people who are over here descended directly from the Moors who were in Spain. But just this just shows you how codified they got and how serious they were to get on code. They had to have an inquisition to get people on code. And the white supremacists, they look up to that to this day. The white supremacists look up to the way the Spanish handled their business today with lynchings, all of that ceremonial lynching. All of that came from the Inquisition. That came from the Inquisition. And another thing that's very interesting, every year they have celebrations of them running the Moors out of Spain. They have what's called Holy Week. It's Semana Santa. And my Spanish is bad, but I think it's Semana Santa. That's the Holy Week. And I want y'all to look this stuff up. Holy Week in Spain, what they do, you have a group of people there called the Nazarenos, and they put on these robes and these pointed hats. And they march around the city. And I want y'all to Google what this looked like. Semana Santa and the Nazarenos. Google what they look like when they dress up in these robes and these hats and march around celebrating running the Moors and the Jews, because they ran Jewish people out of Spain too. They walk around. These outfits look exactly like Ku Klux Klan outfits. And this is exactly where the Klan got their outfits from. A lot of white historians try to pretend that this is just some major coincidence. It is not a coincidence, because over in Spain, they wear these robes and they even have the Iron Cross on it, just like the Klan. This is where the Klan got that from. Them punishing and committing genocide against black people and Jewish people. in Spain and running them out and being victorious. The Klan dresses up in that exact same garb and celebrate the same thing. That's where they got it from. You understand? So this shows the kind of code that these people get on. They're on code majorly. And they're serious about getting everybody else on code. See, the thing is, black society over here, we're taught about diversity this and diversity that. Diversity is our greatest strengths. Now, codification is your greatest strength. Because they don't talk that diversity stuff when they get around their groups. When white people get together, they don't talk diversity. When Asians get together, they don't talk diversity. When Hispanics get together, they don't talk diversity. They talk about what's in the best interest for their groups. When we come around, all of a sudden, everything has to be diversity. Everything has to be about inclusiveness. Everything has to be weak and watered down. That's why whenever we start talking about excluding others, everybody gets nervous. Everybody gets nervous because you know what? They don't want another rising of the Moors. They don't want another rising, and they know that we have that energy in us. We have that spirit in us to challenge them because we know instinctively being subjugated by them is wrong, and we know that it should not happen. So they always have an eye on us, and they always have plans and plots on ways to undermine us. And the minute we start talking about unifying for real without all of these other saboteur type of groups, they get nervous because they known that us looking for a Pan-Africanist agenda, they know that that has weakened us because they're like, okay, these niggas want Pan-Africanism. What we'll do, we'll let over all these coons from the diaspora who we know don't like them, who we know worships us, and we'll let these niggas undermine them. And that's what they've been doing. They've been letting all these other groups undermine us for the longest, and we're just now really catching on like we're supposed to. That's why we're stopping that. We're shutting that down. That's why nobody knows what to do now. Because, see, when you start getting on code, people start, they start freaking out. Because people have rode our coattails for so long. But there's a reason why, let's go back to the Spanish and the Moors. They brought a lot of Moors over here. Let's be clear. Because understand, the Moors told them about a lot of stuff that was over here because the Moors had been coming over here. Black people have been coming over here, like I told you, for years. There's a reason why Balboa and DeSoto and Cortez and all these people heard about all of the gold, and they heard about the Fountain of Youth, and they heard about all of these fabled cities. How the hell did they hear about them? How did all of these Spanish explorers hear about all this stuff? Who told them? The Moors were telling them about all this stuff. That's why they brought a lot of Moors with them. The problem is, and I pointed this out before, one thing in Spain, they had a law where you couldn't take an Arabic name no more. They had a law against that. This is how serious they were about getting Moors and Muslims and Jews out of Spain. They were cleansing this thing to the bone. You couldn't even take an Arabic name. So a lot of black people had Spanish names or Christian names. So when you look at Columbus's log, you will hear about the Nino brothers and all this stuff. And you're thinking, oh, that's just another Spanish cat. No, these are a bunch of black dudes. A lot of them are black. And when some of the Spanish explorers came over to the North American continent, when they went over to the South Carolina, Georgia area. They tried to get a settlement there. 1526, the African people, the black people, rose up against them and absorbed and blended in with the Native American society. A lot of those people became the Red Bones and the Melungeons and all of these people that populate those areas to this day. There are all these mysterious black Native American tribes right along that East Coast area where they act like they don't know the origin of these people and why some of these groups call themselves Moors, why the Melungeons, for a long time, the Melungeons back in the day, they used to refer to themselves as Moors because they knew where they came from. They knew that they were part of that rebellious group that came with the Spanish because they came from Spain initially. See, we have to understand history. But out there in North Carolina, Virginia, all of these places, they got these dark Native American people. And a lot of them utilize the name Moor. It's very heavy stuff. So we got to understand our history. We got to understand our history and understand why the white supremacists, when they got on code, they had to smack all the other white supremacists or people in the dominant society. They had to smack them together first before they can tackle the real issue, which were the non-white people. And this is what they're trying to do now. And we have to do that to a certain degree. See, we have to, people who don't want to be on code, they're out. See, we ain't got time for niggas to come around. Well, I want to feel like I want to feel. We ain't all got to be thinking the same way. You know, we ain't got time for niggas like that. You understand what I'm saying? We ain't got time for these little old contrary niggas who just want to be contrary for attention. We don't have time for that. I want to say what I want to say. All that just being combative and argumentative and divisive just for the sake of being divisive, and it's really about getting some damn attention. See, a lot of niggas know, niggas love attention more than water. So if they're contrary and oppositional about every damn thing, people will focus on them and argue back and forth with their asses. We ain't got time for that shit. Get your ass on somewhere and sit down. We ain't got time for niggas who want to talk in circles and jump through hoops with dumb shit and then debate for 20 and 30 hours, these pointless ass debates. We ain't got time for that. We need codification majorly. And all these people who want to be contrary and combative, trying to get butter biscuits, trying to get attention, they have to go. It's just that simple. This is why we look out for our group. I notice a lot of these combative, talking in circle ass niggas are usually non-foundational black American. I'm seeing a lot of that. Most of the people that we see who are not on code, these are non-foundational black Americans. Not saying all. When we look at how the Shea Butter Twitter crowd is and how uncodified they are and everything is about attacking people and online beefs and all this stuff. These are people who ain't from here. So they're out. These are enemies of the state. We have to look at people like that. If you're off code, now if you're from some other place and you're on code, you're good. If you're from some other place and you're on code, you're good. If you're from Kenya or wherever you're from and you're on code with us, when we talk about getting reparations, you're there supporting, we can rock with you. But niggas with that colonizer anchor baby mentality who's trying to undermine everything we do, no, you are a problem. See, they did the same thing in Spain. See, there was a lot of anchor babies in Spain. You had a lot of Moors mixed in with the Spanish and all that. And they were like, y'all got to get your asses out of here too. Yeah, I know you were born here. Yeah, you were born here in Cordova. I know that. But yeah, I know your mama is Spanish and your daddy's a Moor. But get the fuck on up out of here, nigga. We don't trust you. They got them on out of there. It was cruel, but this is how serious they were about getting on code. They're like, yeah, nigga, I know you converted to Christianity. I know your daddy's Spanish and your mama's one of the Moorish chicks. I know, and you mix, but mix your ass on that boat and get up out of here, because we just signed an edict. We don't want you here. We don't trust you, nigga. You're too black for us. It was cruel, but these folks were that serious about getting on code. You dig? So we got to learn how to understand the importance of being on code, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, that's been today's episode of Tariq Radio. I hope everybody goes to HiddenColorsFilm.com to get Hidden Colors 5. It is streaming right now. Everybody, if you have not seen Hidden Colors 5, stream it right now. Ladies and gentlemen, watch it, enjoy it. And I'm so glad people aren't bootlegging the movie. That's respect. I'm glad we're at a place where we can have respect for the game, because we need that. That's another thing. We got to be on code. Something like this, we have to support it so I can do more films like this, because we need this. Buck breaking is needed more than ever, guys. Trust me, I'm trying to get buck breaking together now. I'm planning everything as far as buck breaking. So I'm getting all that together. And I'm in the middle of writing a book. I've been planning on writing this damn book for years, and I'm going to write this book, the Race Baiter book, and that's going to be very good. Where are my producers? I got to get back on my FL Studio game. All my guys who knows how to work FL Studio, hit me up. I got questions, because I done got back on that, and I'm very confused about the new FL Studio. All my guys, producers who work FL Studio, email me at info@TariqElite.com. info@TariqElite.com. But buck breaking is going to be incredible. I got to really take my time with that. It's going to be deeper than what I thought it was going to be. I might have to have a secondary crowdfunding for that, because when I study for films, a lot of times I go into a rabbit hole that's so much deeper. And with this buck breaking thing, I talked about this before. I was just going to talk about buck breaking from the context of slavery and just kind of bring it to how a lot of black males are treated now. But once I get into that rabbit hole and see how deep this thing is, and when I get into the whole transhuman aspect of, that's a whole other Pandora's box that has to be deeply touched on right there. I want to get that brother Phil Valentine. He's real deep with that. Brother Phil Valentine's been talking about that transhumanism stuff for a long time. So buck breaking is going to be way deeper than I thought it was going to be. It's going to be real deep. Especially now, man. I mean, they're really ramping up this thing where they're trying to buck break our children. So I really got to get on that. I got to get on that film. And I am. I'm getting everybody together. I'm trying to figure out who all is going to be in it. I'm coming up with some new creative formats on how I'm going to film it. So that's going to be a heavy one. Yeah, that transhumanism thing, that's a deep rabbit hole. And my thing is, I'm going so deep and I'm going to be exposing so much stuff. I'm like, well, yeah, there's a lot of other shit that I got to prepare for, man. Y'all don't understand. With these movies, I'll be having to do stuff like make sure the family's going to be safe. Y'all don't know some of the stuff I got to go through with these damn movies, man. You know, I'll be putting myself in very vulnerable positions with these movies. Yeah, just not just mentally, just security wise. You know. So, you know, I got to put a lot of stuff in place. Make sure I don't get raided again. Make sure I don't get banned from another country. You know, I got to look out for stuff like that when you do films like this. You dig? This is, but hey, somebody has to do the damn work. So it's not a complaint. I'm just letting folks know the films look easy. There's a lot of stuff that goes in behind the scenes to make this stuff possible. But look, I wasn't scared on the streets, and I'd be damned if I'm going to be scared of a goddamn white supremacist. You dig? I'd be damned if I'm scared of some lowlife-ass white supremacists. You dig? I've always said being afraid of them, that's disrespecting God. Being afraid of some damn white supremacists is being disrespectful to God. And y'all take that quote with you. That's why I'm so fearless against them. Motherfucker white supremacists. I wish black folks get that energy. Yeah, they might do this, they might do that. They need their system to harm you. It still ain't shit. Yeah, you might use your system to harm us, incarcerate us, deprive us of resources, and you still ain't shit. Now, anyway, let me get out of here, man. Go to HiddenColorsFilm.com. I'm going to holla. Y'all be good.